You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Amiko Lee. Amiko, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thank you for having me. I'm so glad to discuss more about the show with you.
Me too. I'm really looking forward to this. So we're talking about your show at Ptolemy Gallery, of course, near, and there's links here so listeners can learn more about it or go see it before it closes on the 9th of November. But for now, yeah, let's begin with the title maybe of this show, Near. You know, there's something about the show and how it's presented where I know there's photographs in the show, but I don't know a lot about them. There's something about the show and one image from the show that seems to be both about a kind of poetry, and it's also a little obscure, right? What is near, or how I was reading it, isn't always legible. It isn't always easy to see. But what was your thought in that title, Near?
Yeah, I like the idea of near is something infinitely close to almost become exactly that thing, but not exactly. Just getting very close, very kind of close proximity. As a photographer's viewpoint, people sometimes, I notice people confuse subject matter and also what I'm trying to depict. Like, for example, when I'm photographing a portrait, people wanted to know the kind of identity, the kind of biographical information of the photograph, but maybe it's not about that information, but it's using the kind of genre of portraiture to kind of evoke a sense of familiarity or use or adolescence, the fragility of use and so on. So I wanted to title the show Near because it's kind of, you get very close to the subject, but you also kind of remain far and distant at the same time because you're not going to become the subject.
And how does this show differ from in your estimate of Nothing to Do Here But Wait, which was a show that seems to have some similarities to it, but that was a recent show in New York. How is this body of work different, if it is?
Yeah, Mandarin, that show titled Nothing to Do Here But Wait is happening in like an office building. It's a non-gallery space, so kind of viewers stumbled upon this art installation within the office cooperative space. Versus here, I took a very minimalist approach where there is no carpet, no kind of artificial lighting, there's no like stimulating props for viewers to kind of enter into the work. There's just like very straightforward and very simplistic photograph. They appear to be a simple installation, but I would argue that it's a more difficult show compared to Nothing to Do Here But Wait, which has a lot of elements of video, of installation, of sculptural display, of drawing, of all these kind of elements, right? So I would say these two shows are very different. I'm so glad Patrick Reynolds, who's the director of the gallery, offered me this opportunity to have these two shows almost happen around the same time to show the kind of what I wanted to depict as an artist, the kind of the aleatoric kind of distance between subject matter I'm interested in, but also maybe visually it might look quite different, but if you really kind of spend time with the work, there is these kind of overarching scene that start to kind of correlate and speak to each other.
So let's talk about that dialogue, that overarching theme that speaks to one another in the show at Ptolemy. I mean, we could talk about the other one as well alongside it, if that helps. But in terms of the conversation that's happening, as you're saying, it's not, you know, between the works, let's say, it's not about the subject matter, directly. It's about something else. So what is that something else? What is the if this isn't too abstract, like the conversation that's happening between the works?
Yeah. So when the viewers enter the gallery space, they saw these 8 photographs, almost like spread around in a room. Almost, I would like to imagine like stars in the sky, because they're hanging at different heights. There are photographs that are more straightforward. I am having a kind of spreadsheet of all the images in the show right now. Like, there are images that are straightforward. There is not a lot of manipulation, not a lot of changes, like artist kind of touch within the photograph. Like the beginning of the photograph is this young boy who appearing to his mid-20s. And I really enjoy looking at someone through the lens of photography. You look at the fabric of his cotton t-shirt. It's treated with the same type of care, with the way camera renders his hair underneath kind of the light. So there is not a lot of happened with like me interfering with the subject matter. Like, I'm just trying to be a careful, kind of quiet observer, and I want to let these confusion, these kind of ideas of views, trying to be figuring out what they wanted to be as an adult in this kind of grown-up society, and all these kind of themes start to kind of unpack by just presenting them as who they are, and I don't need to do much. And from there, I paired up next to a photograph where the book seems to be in the middle of flipping. For me, this is another transitional moment in the show. Like, I would argue these two are both transitional moments. They are like in the moment of not yet adult and somewhere in between adolescence, and the book are like a metaphor for that kind of passage of time. The viewer would not immediately notice or be aware of the kind of technical manipulation, but I have to kind of impose 2 photographs in one to have this moment where the book have this kind of perfect flip, and also you see the second page yet still so perfectly. And what I'm drawn to is still the quiet treatment of the photograph. You can still see the light have this kind of very uncanny presence in the photograph, as if it's almost floating. It has this kind of watery presence. Right, so there is photograph, like the first one, I did 0 manipulation, versus here I did manipulation, but my labor is very hidden, but it's mostly to kind of enhance this feeling of strangely quiet, right? So like, I'm happy to go into like each individual photograph, and they all have these sort of careful consideration for me, but I also wanted to leave it sort of open-ended for the viewer to notice these kind of nuanced detail. But I am definitely happy to point out more photographs and speak more in detail if there's any particular image that interests you.
Yeah, we could go more into detail. I'd like that. I'd like to ask a little bit about just approach. I mean, you know, in terms of photography and working with a person, you know, not necessarily a portrait, but about something else, how the lens kind of creates an interface. Mm-hmm. How does that work for you? What kind of cameras are you using? And how does that work for you in terms of setting up or designing an image?
Yes, I was trained using film camera when I was a student. I used a Mamiya RZ67. It is a camera that the bellow would be able to extend. I started using this camera right after I using 4x5. So it's kind of strange for me to start learning about photography through 4x5, which I think most of the school teach kind of certified millimeter darkroom black and white first, but I learned my first photo class. I took my first photo class as a 4x5 camera user, which is rather straightforward. There is a lens board, there is a lens mounted to the lens board, and then behind the bellow, it was just the film, right? So it's really like a straightforward apparatus. Versus now, I've transitioned fully into using digital camera because I'm no longer teaching, and it's quite difficult for me to find a place that have the quality of the scanner I wanted to use. But I mentioned all these kind of camera equipment stuff just because I think I have a rather straightforward relationship with my camera. I think the camera is sort of like a dumb tool. There's not a lot happen within the camera. I mean, I think there is manipulation happening in Photoshop. I spend a lot of time getting to know the subject, building relationship, but within the capture, it's very instantaneous. I use my digital camera as if I'm using a Polaroid. I just capture image with as much information as I want because I am quite greedy. I took in a lot of information. I asked the person to keep changing different, I wouldn't say poses, but just the way they stand, a different kind of profile versus different light. It's a very demanding process for the subject as well, right? Like you have to have that kind of patience with me as a photographer, not to get bored by my request. And then to be really understand what I'm looking for is not yet apparent to me yet. So most of these photographs are took at least 3 to 5 years ago, and it took me a very long time to kind of put them together as a sequence because I usually have one or two images I really gravitate towards, and I use that as the kind of anchor to pull from my archive to find similar image and also very drastically different image to kind of riff off from.
Yeah, that's so interesting. The photography is such an interesting process, and everybody seems to approach it so differently. And at the same time, it's a process that everybody knows now, right? I mean, you're starting mm-hmm. with film, large format, now digital, and we're in a time where everyone's walking around with a camera, right, on their mm-hmm. phone. And it's mm-hmm. such a photography seems to have changed, perhaps, or how we perceive it in the works in the show. There's a narrative here, right? As opposed to, I'm not sure what the opposite of a narrative would be. I guess something completely abstract, but there are stories being told here. Is that correct?
Yes. I've done quite a decent amount of show lately. I've been thinking about the question of what drives viewer to come to see a show. So my past sort of strategy was to introduce a lot of clues and elements. And then sometimes the narrative or the reference are so niche. Like I wanted to use an example. I remember when I'm from Shanghai, China originally. And when I studied in US, I just feel so out of place because people keep saying these references I never heard of. They will talk about things from Steinfeld, for example, and I haven't watched that show, and I wouldn't know what they're talking about. And they were so obsessed with coffee, and nobody seems to be awake without coffee. So sometimes I wanted to infuse these narratives that are so specific to my to my childhood and to my kind of upbringing. So people grew up with kind of Sino-Asian kind of reference because Shanghai received a lot of kind of cultural imports from Japan and Korea when I was a kid. We grew up kind of watching a bunch of like Japanese anime. So like there are a lot of this kind of tenderness and softness that's associated with these kind of feminine manga that I grew up reading and watching and really influenced by. So to go back to the question about narrative, I wanted to think about what's the role of the viewer? I wanted to create structures for viewers to be able to engage with the work, but I am also wanting to withhold. I wanted to withdraw a little bit because I do not want to give fully my what I'm thinking, what I was afraid of, because I think as an artist, as long as I'm not offending anybody, I think it's okay to keep a little bit of secrets, not to be fully transparent. Especially my subjects are very personal and you don't need me to tell you that. You can just really feel it from just looking at the photographs, the pink pastel kind of almost like a Vaseline over it, like this kind of rose glass
right.
Tinted filter make everything so romantic, and yet it's the scene depicted is so mundane, right? Like it's there's nothing spectacular happening. It's not about like a firework, or it's not about, you know, like these kind of visual nothing crazy happened. So I wanted to keep this sort of balance within the narrative. There is a hint of narrative, but the viewer doesn't need to know the exact kind of before and after of this particular story. I think that's also sort of close or like related to the title Near.
Well, it's also about memory to some extent then, isn't it? We're talking about the difficulty of kind of capturing or understanding a memory. Is that also correct, or am I off there? Like when you talk about kind of, you know, the rose tint and and the kind of intimacy of an experience that can't be translated, that's a memory, right? That's an experience in your life, it sounds like, as you began to say, right? What early influences. But that's also what it brings up in the viewer, right? The viewer has the opportunity then to kind of step into a type of memory. Or am I going too far there? Is that not exactly how you imagine the viewer experiencing these?
I tend to think very minimum about the viewer, because I understand the viewer is not a singular audience, right? Like it could be a very different age, a very different geographic kind of background, and also a very different expectation coming to the space, what they experienced prior. I think that part, I think it's very close to what you describe about memory, because I'm not trying to capture memory per se, but I capture the present. But then when I present it, they become memories. So there is a time lapse. So I still think about photography as this time-based media, even though it's still, but it has such a crucial relationship to time.
It absolutely does. Yeah, I think of it as time-based medium, for sure. I mean, as books are, which is you know, the interesting inclusion of the book in there too, right? They're both time-based mediums, you know, like film, like installation. Sometimes they all seem to come together: film, books, photography, and an installation. Speaking about the book in there, there is a relationship there, right, to the book in that sense. It's great talking to you about this and this kind of I hesitate to go specifically into these because I like stepping back and talking about it. In the time that you've started you know, taking images from large format to now, has your perception of photography as a medium changed? I mean, it's still time based, of course, but so much has changed in terms of how we all perceive photography and who's carrying a camera and who's not, or is everybody carrying a camera? You know, how do you feel about that in terms of?
I think this is such a complex question. I really don't have a very singular answer, because I remember at one point I was really resonate with a lot of other photographers who wanted to highlight and emphasize the the care. I don't want to use the word labor about photography, because there are people who wanted to show this kind of tableau style of photography, be like, you know, we know what we're doing. we have put ourselves into a lot of kind of difficulty to make these images, and you are just casually snapping the image. Therefore, putting us into a kind of a hierarchy than you did. But I would, you know, at the time I was resonating with the part of care, you know, the time you spend with your subject, you're kind of planning with the shoot, because I am a very shy person. It's very hard for me to approach a subject. Photography gave me sort of an agency to approach people. But how to go about a shoot, even when there's no people around, or like even there's no people involved, just by going into a space, how to kind of approach kind of my desire to photograph this particular space, it involves a lot of care as well. So I did remember at the time I was really frustrated with the lack of care from the viewer, because I knew if I were to hang the photograph like what I did right now, the viewer would have just spent like 10 seconds in the gallery and just left. because this is just, unfortunately, the attention span that we have. And I grew to embrace the lack of control I have, the lack of agency I have as an artist. No matter from the production side, meaning like the part I spend time with my subject, with the landscape, or lack of control with the audience, right? So I really embrace that now. So I still sort of just do the sequence the way I wanted it, but try to not worry too much about what the viewer might think about, because I can be very surprised at a viewer's reaction. Sometimes people can so easily and effortlessly understand what I'm coming from. Why am I sequencing the photograph this way? And why are they kind of so mundane, right? Like there's nothing spectacular happened. It's not about these things or access that nobody else has, right? Like, but it's about these people, books, location, everybody could have photographed, but they didn't. And then, I wanted to have this sort of a slow pacing with the image. And I use my iPhone a lot for note-taking. You know, sometimes you take a photo of the location, maybe more specifically, like the hour of a restaurant, or like an hour of the library, or you took the photo of... if this clothing is 95% cotton or something, you take photos of these as just a note taking. And I also think about my photographs here in the show maybe also are similar to a form of note taking, right? Like they're all fundamentally information that's kind of extracted from the world. I'm not creating anything per se, but I am manipulating the kind of pre-existed.
So well said. Thanks so much for talking about that. Yeah, I feel like we could talk so long about that approach in photography, but I want to thank you now for talking with me today. I want to also tell listeners, of course, there's links here to find out more, and hopefully they can go see the show. I want to ask you one more question before we go, though, a little off topic. What are you reading at the moment?
I am reading Yoko Tawada. She is linguistic. She's Japanese, but she's trained in German. So she's very sensitive in this language, kind of linguistic difference in German versus Japanese. And she wrote in kind of essay format, but also recently she published a novel about embodying this kind of Vietnamese girl who's kind of kidnapped into Germany, and borrowing this Vietnamese girl's kind of voice to kind of critique Japanese influence into the kind of whole kind of Asia, in Vietnam, in China, and so on. So I'm very interested in this kind of cross-cultural writers and their kind of viewpoint, because they have this kind of incorrect feelings, this kind of incorrect position going into the world. And I really share that sentiment. And I, instead of feeling I am mistranslating things, I wanted to use this as an advantage and be more generative. And yeah, I really recommend Yoko Tawada for my fellow non-native speaker, and also maybe for native speakers to consider their positions as well.
Thanks so much for sharing that as well. I want to thank you again, Miko, for talking with me today. It's really been such a pleasure. And yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.